This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us, SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM. We'll have the good, the bad, and the dumb coming up later on in this hour, 35 minutes from now. You don't want to miss that. Always a good midweek, good, bad, and the dumb. Heisman Trophy ceremony is going to be this weekend in New York, and there's four finalists for it. There's Jalen Hurts, there's Chase Young, there's Justin Fields, and of course there's LSU's Joe Burrow, who's the favorite to win this award. The question of going into the Heisman is becoming not who's going to win it, it's by how much he's going to win it. And it takes a little bit of the suspense out of what I think is one of the more fun awards to follow. One of the reasons I like the Heisman Trophy is the actual voting. It's watching the different regions of the country and how they vote for the Heisman. Now, if you don't know how a Heisman winner is voted upon, it's very similar to kind of like a Hall of Fame ballot where you take 10 guys and you vote and whoever's on the most ballots, et cetera. It's the same kind of thing. You vote for 1, 2, and 3, and then you get points for being 1, 2, and 3. And if, you know, who gets the most points wins the Heisman Trophy. So the strategy, and this is why it's strategic, it's almost like an election, because if you cover sports in any capacity, a lot of times you'll get a whole bunch of Heisman promotional stuff for the candidate, because they want you to know about that particular player so that you'll pay attention. And it used to happen a lot more before cable and before the internet, where you can sort of see on a daily basis how the college football world is progressing. But I remember my first job in Manchester, New Hampshire, my boss had a Heisman Trophy vote, and we used to go through all of the stuff that he would get from different schools that would say, like, don't forget Ty Detmer, or don't forget, like, it was really fun to see the different kind of things that they would send out as promotional items. I remember when CJ Spiller of Clemson, I was in working at a station, and I got a life-size CJ Spiller wall measuring chart, right, for kids, because CJ Spiller was small, and it was a huge poster, life-size poster that you could put on the wall, and the kids could be like, look, you gained an inch, et cetera, et cetera. This year, because Joe Burrow is having that kind of nationally impacted year, where it's just, as great as the other guys are, Burrow is going to go running away from this. It loses a little bit of the strategic element of how did this break down in the winner's favor. Now we just know that he's just going to win by a lot.
This is SB Nation AM. On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us, SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM, as we continue along. Good Wednesday to you. Hey, football and basketball season's in full swing, getting close to the end of the NFL season, and with college and NBA rolling along, it's time to get in the game with our exclusive sports betting partners, BetOnline. You can sign up today, and you'll receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. You can start betting college and pro sports right away. Every spread, every total, every winner or loser, straight bet, parlay, tease your way through the season. You can even bet on the wild proposition bets. Who's going to win the NBA MVP? If you got a thought, you can make a bet on it. Get the fastest market odds updates with payouts with our new sportsbook partners, BetOnline. Head over to their website today. Use your mobile device and join. Use the promo code SBNation55, SBNation55, to receive your 50% welcome bonus. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Last week, maybe it was a week before, I mentioned a speech, a little post-game rant that Florida coach Dan Mullen said about Felipe Franks, and the sort of off-the-cuff comment that he made about the state of college football when he said, you know, kids today, players today, or they don't play, they move on, they go on to somewhere else. And then sort of praising Kyle Trask, who is now the current quarterback for the Gators, as a guy who stayed within the system, worked his way, waited for his opportunity, and grow. There are statements, there's a way of doing business, or there's a way of sort of speaking about certain things in sports that have not lasted the test of times. You ever watch Remember the Titans, for example, when Denzel Washington says, "Water is for weak," you know, right? He goes, you know, we don't think like that anymore. Now, that was the thought process in the 70s, right? That if you were, you know, out working hard and you needed water, that was for the weak. If you needed water. Now we make sure kids are hydrated all the time. We know now, we know better than that. I really
do we still believe coffees are for closers only?
Yeah, coffees are for closers. That's right. Put the coffee down. I love that. Alec Baldwin is fantastic. But there are, again, there is these ways of thinking that become very antiquated. And we don't think like that anymore as we progress. Now, some people pine for the good old days, right? They, you know, they want the way it used to be when they were growing up. I'll give you a perfect example of that. I did many, many shows and took many, many calls over the years when the NFL was readjusting to make the game safer, and they were limiting, they were regulating how you tackled and how you went after the quarterback and all these things. Because I remember how many people just could not get it around their head what the NFL was trying to do when you pay a quarterback $30 million a year, and you kind of want to protect that investment and utilize that investment week in and week out. They wanted old fashioned smash mouth football. They wanted the football they grew up in. They wanted the big hits video that they that you could buy at the end of the season where it was just nothing but big hits. He got lit up, right? They wanted that football, and they felt like it was getting taken away from them. When Vince McMahon started the XFL, I remember I was at a press conference with him in Vegas. He said, "We're returning football to its smash mouth roots." Right? I mean, that's what the XFL wanted. They wanted a tougher, more violent brand of football because they were trying to appease to people who felt like the NFL was getting away from them. Back to this quarterback player transfer portal thing that Dan Mullen is sort of, you know, kind of, you know, talking about with about his quarterback Felipe Franks moving on so he can play. I think that's going to be a dinosaur thought. As we move forward, I think coaches today had better get a handle on that that kind of thinking is just not going to work for the modern day player. You can like it or hate it. I don't care which side you're on. But the reality is kids are now understanding that this is a business. And more so going forward, when that whole image and likeness thing gets through and you are really starting to see these kids starting to make some money based on who they are. They know bench players don't get money. They're not going to be the star of the campus enough to allow them to utilize that rule to make a decent income. So they've got to go someplace to play. And that's where you're going to see college football in general really, really move forward. And the old way of thinking, like, well, I'll just criticize these kids or shame these kids and call them quitters, not directly, but sort of indirectly with my language to sort of imply that they gave up on us because they left to go somewhere else, I think is a dinosaur thought. And I think that it's going to be looked on terribly by the players of the future. This is now going to be the reality. And Jalen Hurts is a perfect example of that. Jalen Hurts is going to the Heisman Trophy ceremony, and he's going to the college football playoff. Now, would he have been able to help Alabama go to the college football playoff? Well, I don't know, maybe. I didn't think Mac Jones was all that awful in the Iron Bowl. He did throw a couple of picks, but who knows what Jalen Hurts would have done. But the reality of it is that he didn't have to stay. He went to become a star somewhere else because of the limitations of your career in college. And I can see down the road a coach like Dabo, Dan Mullen, for example, or anybody else, Will Muschamp, anybody else, just holding on to this idea that in the end, you quit on your team. But the kids aren't quitting on the business and they're not quitting on themselves. We love this idea, again, of the unselfish act of being part of a team and willing to sacrifice. But in the end, imagine if you're a parent and you've spend a lot of money on putting your kids in camps and getting your kid personal training and putting them in travel teams or whatever it is that you're doing. And then they're playing at a program where they're not playing, and you know he could be playing somewhere else. And you know he could be maximizing his college time playing for somewhere else. right? It's a tough way to maybe you don't want your kid to quit on the commitment, but you also want to see him play. And if he's not playing, what's he doing? It's not fun to wait your turn sometimes if you don't have to wait your turn. And I know that goes counter to all the thoughts that we have, but think of it from a business perspective. Think of the same coaches that are leaving jobs for better gigs. And they're doing it at the worst time at times. Because of the way the calendar is set up in college athletics, what drives me crazy is this time of year right now, where you have to leave right now to go be a head coach somewhere. If you're Mike Norvell, if you're Lane Kiffin, if you're Sam Pittman, your offensive line coach, if you're anybody else that is on the move to a bigger and better job, you are leaving right now and your team is heading to a bowl game. Maybe the interim coach takes over. Maybe you try to do double duty, but the calendar isn't in your favor, so you have to make that decision. And sometimes the decision is to cut it off and go. Just cut it off and start building my staff and get recruiting going, because National Signing Day is coming up and I want to make a small inroad into that as the new head coach of State U. That's the business of college football. That has to happen. That has to occur. So if I'm a school, I have to hire right now. And if that means that other school, if he has to do double duty or he has to quit on his team to go work for us, that's what he's going to have to do. And the same thing with these players. So don't give me the sob story about a player leaving and quitting on his program because he has to go, you know, try to land on another team so he can play, when you quit on your team before a bowl game so you can start recruiting for your new employer. It's two sides of the coin, and you're going to see this more and more and more. And for some of you out there, it's the kind of thinking you don't want to have, because you're so ingrained into the idea of the name on the front is more important than the name on the back and all of that. And then there's some of you who are know what is coming for college football. You know the Pandora's box that has opened up when it comes to the kind of economics that is going to land on the feet of guys who are star players, who are skill players. And you would be a fool in the 4 years that you have to complete your college career in whatever sport it is, football, whatever, not to maximize that as much as you possibly can. And I just see a changing of the guard, and it's worth noting. Because then I was reminded of that with, once again, here's the list of coaches that are moving on to other gigs. And I'm like, nobody's criticizing them. Nobody's saying that they're going to quit on their team if they have to leave that school in the hands of an interim coach for their upcoming bowl game so they can go convince some 17-year-old kid and some 17-year-old kid's mother, I'll have your back for the next 4 years. You come play for me, I'll make sure that he gets an education and he is in the right place for him, for his future. So when he's giving that speech to that 17-year-old kid, because National Signing Day is coming up, remember all the kids that are on the back preparing for a bowl game without him. And somehow Felipe Franks failed his team by wanting to transfer out of the program, or Jake Bentley failed the Gamecocks because he wanted to transfer out of the program and go play for Utah. Heck, at this point, I'd go play for Utah. I mean, I just think it's insane. It's an insane world. It's hypocritical, too. Absolutely hypocritical. All right, good, the bad, and the dumb. That's coming up. Don't forget, you can hit us up on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. Continuing along on SB Nation AM.
You're listening to SB Nation AM. On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us, SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio. And the holidays are coming, so if you need a last-minute gift, think O'Reilly Auto Parts. They've got you covered. They have several options for gifts under $20. Digital tire gauge, that's pretty cool. 21 multi-tools, storage containers, even a universal backup camera. I always wanted one of those. Those are neat. Or you can get professional quality power torque tool set starting at just $19.99. And who doesn't love gift cards? You can even buy gifts online, pick them up in the store. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better parts, better prices every day. All right. So the good, the bad, the dumb coming up a little bit. Thursday night football, we got the Jets taking on the Baltimore Ravens. Now, oh boy. If you were to watch this game, if you were like, I got nothing to do on Thursday, I want to settle in and watch this game, How much of it is just to marvel at Lamar Jackson, and how much is it to just see how actually if the Jets have any sort of semblance of competitiveness in this game?
Nah, I think it's the former.
I think it's just watching Lamar Jackson do his thing. He is one of the
especially
stories
against that team.
Is he one of the stories of 2019 when we look back on the year? This kind of NBC season, because I was just thinking about how good of a year 2019 has been for us in sports. I mean, it's really been awesome, absolutely awesome in terms of the stories that we got to talk about over the last year. And Lamar Jackson is one of them. Just this emergence of this amazing, amazing quarterback that, you know, came into existence because Joe Flacco got hurt and then got to keep his job. You know, they always say, like, you don't lose your job to injury. Well, Joe Flacco lost his job to injury. I mean, because Lamar Jackson was a better option. And now he's taken the league by storm, over 1,000 yards rushing, becoming the second quarterback to do that behind Michael Vick. He'll pass Michael Vick at some point this season, barring an early injury against the Jets. It'll keep him out for the rest of the year. Which, God, this is one of the reasons I was talking about this earlier, about how people, were really upset about, the quarterback. You got to protect the quarterback with these ways of tackling and the ways of hitting. But, man, in reality, I mean, no offense to RG3, but is he the backup for the Ravens? Robert Griffin III? Is he their backup? Because I think he is, right? I don't want to see him.
Well, he will.
Like, as a Steeler fan, I mean, I want the Ravens to collapse as quickly as possible.
You want them to keep Lamar Jackson out there the entire time.
But from an entertainment perspective, right? I mean, don't we want these guys to play? That's one of the reasons they get the kind of money that they get, is because we don't want them on the bench hurt. We want to see them play and play in the postseason. It always is a less than feel when you get backup quarterbacks playing. Oh, sure, there are fun stories. Oh, sure, there's a Jeff Hostetler comes in and wins a Super Bowl and whatnot. But, or Trent Dilfer for that matter. But nevertheless, you want the stars to be the stars. That's the way it is. That's what makes it great. So, I like watching Lamar Jackson play, even though he's wearing Ravens colors. I like watching him play because it's just fun. I remember the first time I saw Michael Vick in person. I couldn't believe it. I mean, I really couldn't. When you see it on TV, it's like, okay, cool. When I remember my angle at the Bronco game in which I saw him, it had this, it was like, instead of straight on left, right football field, I was more on the angle of the stadium where I saw it was more like 8 o'clock to 2 o'clock. Seeing the field in that way. And I was more on the bottom end of where the 8 o'clock was. And I remember watching Michael Vick go back to pass and like seeing the defense sort of spread out in its formation and coverage and seeing like this vast real estate. And Vick would gobble that real estate up in the shortest amount of time humanly possible. It was something I'd not witnessed live before. And it was just something that I remember talking about it for weeks and weeks. I'm like, you do not understand how quick he is when there is open territory. And Lamar Jackson gives you that same kind of feel. That run he had just a couple of weeks ago where he gobbled up like 30 yards when it felt like a half a second, where he is so quick when he moves to see, when he sees an opportunity, he is so quick to that opportunity that it's a joy to watch. It's a different way of doing it. Not that the drop back passers and the guys who do that for a living aren't fun to watch either, but there's an element to his game that is really cool. It's a really cool twist. And so Thursday night, the Ravens have been on national TV a bunch, but for the most part, if you've seen Lamar Jackson in a number of different ways, see him against this Jets team, because they're terrible. He might just tear them up. But he is dealing with the quad issue, so we'll see.
Yeah, he'll be out by half.
Yeah. I think that's what you gotta be really careful about this. It doesn't matter. Like, you want home field advantage, but you want Lamar Jackson. So don't play around if he's got this.
Lamar Jackson.
Right. If he's got it. They're averaging 200 yards per game on the ground, the Ravens.
Well, it's amazing. So if the Ravens are up, say, 21-7 at the half, do you keep them in? Do you roll them out in the third quarter?
Whew, no. I don't know. I mean,
maybe keep him in for like another series or two, maybe, just to see how it's going.
Just to see how it's going. But if this quad injury, even if it's 30% or whatever, it's still enough for you to pay attention to it if you're Harbaugh.
It's Thursday. Just run RG3 out there.
Run RG3 out there.
But then again, you don't know how much of this is spin. He's been limited in practice, but that might be more precautionary.
What
than
I'm wanting, I'm wanting them to run RG3 out there so we can get the load management talk in the NFL for the first time ever.
Exactly. Load management. So, you know, a lot of buzz about Drew Lock in Denver. He's won his first two starts of the season, and there's they're already just elated on cloud nine. The future is bright, et cetera, et cetera. He's going to Arrowhead. The Chiefs have won like the last, I want to say, seven games against the Broncos. Like since Manning left, Kansas City has won every game against Denver since that point. And there's like a lot of buzz. Like if Locke could go to Arrowhead and beat the Chiefs, oh my God, there's this feeling. Look, I don't know if Locke's going to be a great quarterback or not. I don't, if that's irrelevant. But what is relevant is this is why when you are a team and you have a young quarterback, whether you draft him or you, a lot of it is drafting because unsigned guys outside of like Delvin Hodges exciting Pittsburgh, it doesn't usually work that way. But when you draft a young quarterback that gets an opportunity to play and he plays, we saw it with Gardner Minshew, Giants early with Daniel Jones when he won his first two starts. There is a level of excitement that can just overwhelm a bad season. And it can get you to a point where you watch the game differently and you don't care. That's the cool thing. If you're, you know, the Broncos are 5-8, okay? And so 8-8's not going to get them in unless an avalanche of disasters happen. But you have two choices if you're a Denver fan, for example. You can just watch in self-pity that the team is once again heading towards possibly another losing season, although if they win three out, they'll be 500. Or you can watch the game with this level of optimism that a young quarterback can bring when he plays well, when he plays really well. The Steelers had this. Steeler fans went through this with the game against the Cardinals. Delvin Hodges played really well, threw the ball really well in that game to a point where people were saying, wow, this is a different, he's looking different than the last week's game in which they won and beat Cleveland, that he is looking even better. There's just a level of optimism when a young quarterback plays well. Now, we all know the reality. The reality is the wheels can come off at any minute, right? You can be on cloud nine in this league and then be falling apart the next. You can win your first two starts and then lose, you know, eight in a row like Daniel Jones did before he got injured.
Or you can be like what Jimmy Garoppolo was.
Jimmy Garoppolo.
When he first came to the Niners, he won, what, four or five in a row, midseason trade?
Right.
Then the whole following season, pretty much out the entire year.
Yep.
Then you're unsure.
What's happened to the enthusiasm for Baker Mayfield in Cleveland, right? I mean, we know
there's
that this
turmoil
is
in Cleveland now.
This is a very, very topsy-turvy league. And, you know, I caution people all the time, don't get too excited when a young kid comes in and does well. A lot of the times when these young kids come in and do well, like in a losing season or whatever, there isn't the same level of pressure. There's really only personal pressure. He's not going to Arrowhead in a must-win situation for the Broncos. They're 5-8. Of course they want to win. Of course they're competitive, but they're 5-8. They're not on the cusp of losing out on the wild card or anything like that. That gives you a little bit of freedom to sort of relax and say, look, let me just do what I do best. Let me go through my instincts of what got me here in the first place, and let's have some fun out here, right? But when you start seeing different defenses, when those pressures come, when the expectations hit, when you're the toast of the town, when you go into training camp and all eyes are on you and you need to be delivering success, how do you take it from there? And we'll see with Daniel Jones, right? I'm okay with Daniel Jones losing all these starts. If I'm a Giants fan, I'm okay with it. It happens. Peyton Manning, it happened for him. It happened to a lot of guys when you first get into this league, right? But you also can go from toast of the town to Marcus Mariota, right, who's now going to have to look for another job. You can also go to Jameis Winston, where you just never quite got it, and you're an exciting player when you throw touchdowns, but you're also hard to watch when you throw interceptions. And now there is a big what-do-we-do-with-Jameis conversation in Tampa. There is a level of excitement that you can take as a fan, but you also know it comes with some sort of dose of what are the circumstances that I have to watch and what are the circumstances that I have to take into account my enthusiasm right now. All right, the Broncos thoroughly beat the Texans on Sunday. How many teams will they thoroughly beat who are better prepared than Houston was?
SB Nation AM continues now on SB Nation Radio. Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, thanks for joining us, SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM. It is time for the good, the bad, and the dumb. The midweek edition as we have hit Wednesday. So let's feel good on a Wednesday. What's the good, Mr. Culver?
The good is change.
Change. Change is good.
For the first time in 37 years, Vanna White hosts Wheel of Fortune.
Oh, that's awesome. So why did she host Wheel of Fortune instead of the one and only Pat Sajak?
Well, I guess in the middle of filming, I think they're on remote or something like that. I don't know. It doesn't really matter. You know how game shows work? They film a whole bunch at one time.
Right. They film a bunch all one day.
So in the process of that filming, like they were filming a whole bunch in a week, Pat Sajak had to have emergency surgery.
Oh, no.
Because one of his intestines was blocked.
Oh, God. So that sounds terrible.
Instead of just bringing in anybody, they gave Vanna White the chance to do it.
That's awesome. I didn't see that episode. Did you see it? Did she do good?
I watched highlights. She did okay. She was nervous.
Right, sure.
And she admitted that she was nervous after the show. She even made a little quip at one point saying, wow, you know, when spinning the wheel and it really didn't go anywhere, she's like, wow, this is heavier than it looks.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I heard. That's what I heard.
And she got Minnie Mouse to... Turn the letters, if you will.
Were they filming at Disney World or Disneyland?
I think so. Probably in Orlando.
Right.
So, yeah, Minnie Mouse was out there touching the letters now.
So did she get to say, beep, 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 beep? All right, that means we are out of time. I'll give this wheel a final spin. Remember, vowels are worth nothing. Consonants worth $600. Jane, go.
Yeah, probably.
I'll have a B. There is one B. One B. 5 seconds.
I'm going to go on a limb here. You watch the show a lot.
Yeah, I know how it goes.
And you haven't caught the last couple of ones?
I didn't. I did not see that.
But apparently, I mean, Pat Sajak has always been the host. You and I talked about it once. There was that brief period of time where I think there was a sub-in host.
Early. And I know who it was, too. It was former San Diego Chargers kicker Rolf Benersch.
There you go.
Was the host of Wheel of Fortune when Pat Sajak left. I think he was doing like a night talk show or something like that. But he left to go do something else.
Which failed.
Yeah, Rolf Benersch got the job. And then Sajak got it back. I think, this is just me, I think if your career lands you a major game show, not one of these kind of fly-by-night things that come and go, but like a major game show, I think you just have to settle with, this is what I'm doing for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
Like, no more pursuing anything. I just need to do this every day the best. They pay me really well. It's really popular. I'm going to do this for the next 40 years.
Now, there wasn't one other time when Pat Sajak did not host. And it was an April Fool's Day prank where Pat Sajak and Alex Trebek.
How cool is that?
You know, switch sides.
That's
so
great.
I missed that one. I think that was in 97 or something.
That would have been cool. That would have been really cool. That would have been cool. Good for Vanna.
Yep. Good now, job. I do have another good, by the way.
All right, go ahead.
Because I got to give it a shout out to my cousin, J.J. Culver.
J.J. Culver.
He is the brother of Timberwolves. Forward Jarrett Culver.
Jarrett Culver played for Texas Tech.
Yeah, remember I talked about my cousin last year.
That's right, during the Final Four.
Yeah, well, J.J. Culver goes to Western Baptist University. I think that's the school.
Okay.
Not 100% sure of the school name. But he scored 100 points yesterday.
Did he really? I didn't see that. Did
100
he really?
Points in one game.
I'm shocked that didn't run through my wire. Wow, good for him.
So, not too shabby.
Always good to get a century mark in a basketball game without the reigning of people calling you selfish.
Yep.
Good job.
Matt, he did it on 34 of 62 shooting.
Oh, wow, good for him.
Which is one more than how Wilt accomplished his. Oh, he plays for Wayland Baptist.
Wayland Baptist University. All right. So, very good. Wayland Baptist University.
And he has that, somebody took a photo of him in the Wayland Baptist University locker room where he's holding up a piece of paper that says 100. Oh. Very Wilt Chamberlain-esque.
I did get this email. I did get an email on this. It says, J.J. Culver scored 100 points, second highest total in NAIA history, to lead Wayland Baptist to a 124-60 win over Southwestern Adventist University. His other teammate scored 24 points. That's awesome.
Yeah,
he had 51 at halftime, so a well-balanced attack.
Yeah, it wasn't really him hogging the ball, I guess.
No, good for him.
So good on my cousin.
God, that's awesome.
Probably have a better chance of talking to this cousin than the other one, though.
Very true. Very true. All right, what is the bad of the day?
The bad of the day, you know what? I think you and I have mentioned this before in the past, but it seems to be getting a little bit steam. It's been a little bit going viral lately, and that's the reasons why Ed Orgeron was not hired by USC.
Oh, go ahead with this. Yeah.
Bruce Feldman was on the Rich Eisen show and noted that it was because of Orgeron's accent and personality didn't mesh well with what USC was looking for.
So you mean to tell me that Southern Cal boosters didn't want the Cajun accent of Ed Orgeron messing up their ears?
Pretty much.
Is that really what we're doing now in 2019?
Yeah.
Like, I like that coach so much, but he is just, it's just grating the way he talks. Yeah, I can't,
apparently,
honey, can you get USC to find another coach? Honey, I don't control these things. Yes, you do. Write a check.
Apparently, a lot of people at USC, especially during the Pat Hayden regime, couldn't get past what Ed Orgeron sounded like. They didn't listen to the players. They didn't listen to the staff. At the end of the day, Ed Orgeron is not a country club guy.
No, he is not. And that's why we love Ed Orgeron.
Yep. So, USC, you got Clay Helton.
I felt really bad for Ed Orgeron because he really wanted that USC job really badly.
Oh,
He had taken over for Steve Sarkisian, and the organization was kind of in a mess. And the Sarkisian thing was embarrassing because he was showing up at events drunk, and it was just really hard. And USC was going through this, like, just, it was just a mess. And Ed Orgeron took it over and stabilized it enough that they were winning some games and playing well. And he didn't win at the end. He lost to UCLA, I think. And then they just felt like, okay, thank you for that, but we're going to go find someone else. And I felt bad because Ed Orgeron's a good coach, as we are seeing now.
Yeah,
but
I think he knows what he's doing.
But there was a plan in place, and he landed at the right school with the right culture,
yep.
And good for him.
No, in fact, you and I have commented all the time. There isn't another school that he could have gone to.
Oh, no.
In fact, when his days are up at LSU, because let's face it, they will be at some point down the road. All great coaches got to move on. Whether he's fired or he retires on his own accord, he can only coach in Louisiana.
I know, man. It's great. He went to Louisiana at Northwestern State.
Maybe he goes back
and,
there.
You know, just stay in that beautiful state.
Yep. For the swan
song. I think it's
great. Yep.
But that is a bad on USC's part. I mean, if that's true, shame on those people.
I mean, I know you and I have commented on that before. I don't know if we knew that it was, like, fact.
Yeah.
We kind of assumed that, you know, obviously Ed Orgeron doesn't fit Southern California culture. Although, have you ever talked to a surfer? You can't understand what they're saying.
That's right. I will have to say, man, I think there are jobs where you have to sort of capitulate to the public a lot, that you have to, you know, you have to pretend like you care and listen. You know, think about it, like, I have friends who are restaurant managers, and they deal with some unbelievably unreasonable people who just come in and eat, like, you know, 3/4 of their meal and go, I just didn't like this. Not only do I want a free meal, but I want a free meal when I come back.
And
the manager's got to, and the manager can't go, get out. They have to go, oh, of course, yes, here's 25 gift certificates for you and your family to eat here for free forever because the last quarter of your burger you just didn't like. You just have to put on a smiley face. I wonder how much of that goes on with athletic directors and school presidents, where they really do have to listen to all of the donors who just want to be like, hey, how you doing? Yeah, can I just chew your ear off for the next 45 minutes on who I think should be the head coach of the football team? And you're like, absolutely, come on in. Let me hear it. And you have to listen to them. You have to make them feel important. You have to make them feel wanted. You have to make them want to open up that checkbook. It's got to be a draining at times, don't you think?
No.
Where it's just got to be agonizing, where you're like, oh, I know. He sounds like, yep, I know. He's got that accent. I know, but he's a good coach. I know you can't understand what he's saying.
He's got the players playing right.
Yeah, he's got the players playing right, but I get it.
Yep.
So I know you don't want to have him around because you don't like what he says or how he says it.
And if he did, we'll have to look it up. But if he did lose to UCLA, then that's always a bad thing.
Always a bad thing. It's true. Yep. I think. I don't want to put that on his resume if that didn't happen, but I think it might have. Let's go to the dumb of the day.
Dumb of the day. I don't really know what to make of the story. I came across it, and I find it kind of funny. But at the same time, I'm not going to get all PETA on you.
Sure.
But someone in Vegas has been going around putting tiny cowboy hats on pigeons.
Why?
No idea.
Why are they doing that?
No one can find out. I guess a reporter asked one guy, and all he could say was, "Rodeo's coming." I've read a couple articles on this. No one has a reason. I mean, they're literally tiny cowboy hats, and apparently, I guess they're being glued onto their heads, which is the bad part. But at the same time, I mean, just Google Pigeons Vegas. It'll be the first story that pops up. You know what? They look kind of cool. I'm just saying.
That's great. That is great.
Obviously, PETA's going to be up in arms.
Of course they are.
There's already a bird advocacy group in Vegas, which I'm surprised. They actually specialize. It's called Lofty Hopes. It's a pigeon rescue. I'm like, really?
Mike, pigeon rescue? I thought part of the appeal of the pigeon was that he's kind of it's kind of on its own. It doesn't need protecting.
Yeah,
it's kind of
I mean, that's always the joke, right? Have you ever seen a baby pigeon?
Yeah.
No, you've never seen a baby pigeon.
They're just kind of there.
I'm impressed.
Not to equate them with rats, but they're just like they're kind of like rats. Like they're there.
No, I always call them city chickens.
Oh, yeah. More or less like that. They're just there.
Always there. What I'm impressed about is, because you ever try to catch a pigeon?
No, I mean, that's hard.
It's damn near impossible.
Yeah, that's
These
not
guys
easy.
Have been able to do it. Not only do that, they've been able to glue tiny cowboy hats on top of their heads.
Yeah.
And, you know, but Vegas is having fun with it, because there was one lady was talking about. She's like, yeah, I thought it was a joke. I thought it was a myth. And then I saw one in my neighborhood, and I got excited. And so she ran out and got, you know, took video of it.
Oh, wow.
Before it flew away.
Awesome.
To have video proof.
Rodeo's coming. How great is that?
I mean, that was the best line. Rodeo's coming.
Rodeo's coming. That's great. All right. That's the good, the bad, and the dumb. It is a Wednesday. It's SB Nation Radio on SB Nation AM.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, this hour of SB Nation Radio is presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. I do correct myself when I do make a mistake. When I was talking about Ed Orgeron, I was like, wait a minute, I think I got that backwards. And so during the break, I said, I got to look that up. Orgeron took over for Lane Kiffin after Lane Kiffin was fired, and they took over in 2013. Kiffin was let go very early in the season. I remember it was like late September when he got let go on the tarmac. And then Orgeron took over and went 6-2 for the Trojans. Now, he lost badly to UCLA, and then they didn't want to retain him, and then they hired Steve Sarkisian. So Orgeron was out, Sarkisian came in, and Clay Helton followed Sarkisian after Sarkisian was let go for sort of some of the embarrassment.
Drunken
misconduct. So the USC coaching timeline was Pete Carroll, Lane Kiffin, Ed Orgeron, Steve Sarkisian, and Clay Helton. So I messed that up earlier, but luckily, my brain was like, I think you screwed up, so go correct it. So I forgot
about Sarkisian.
So, yes, I know. It wasn't a very long tenure, if I'm not mistaken. I mean, 2013 to, I don't know, just a couple of years ago, like maybe a couple of years on the job, and that was really it, if I'm not mistaken. And then he went, remember Sarkisian went to the Falcons?
Yep.
He was working with the Falcons. I think he did that for 1 year, and now he's with the...
Remember he was with Alabama for a game?
Yeah. Well, I think he's back with Alabama.
Is he back with Alabama?
He was with Alabama for a game. You're right. That was the whole Lane Kiffin situation. Remember, Kiffin was the offensive coordinator.
He already accepted a job.
Yeah. Kiffin's got a... I mean, my God, Kiffin should write a book. And he's only 44. That's the crazy thing about Kiffin.
Wait to see what happens next.
He's only 44. Kiffin was the offensive coordinator at Alabama, and they were in the playoff. And they had that one game, and I want to say they played Washington, I think. And Nick Saban had a really hard time with them, so they let him go. So he could go, like, fine, if you're going to go to Florida Atlantic, go to Florida Atlantic. Goodbye. And Sarkisian took over the OC job for that one game of the finals. And I think they lost to Clemson.
Yeah.
And then Sarkisian went to the Falcons, and I think was there for 1 year, and then returned to Alabama. So there you have it. See, I like to get my coaching timelines correct on these guys, because I think it says a lot about their growth as players and the growth as coaches. Like, Orgeron was probably devastated that he lost that USC head coaching job, because when he went to LSU, he was their defensive line coach. Imagine that. Like, oh man, I was 6-2. Why didn't I get that job? Everybody loved me. My players loved me. You know, he said that the players were like his sons. And you know, no offense to being like, all right, well, at least I'll stay in Division I. I'll be a defensive line coach at LSU. But the college football gods let it all work out. Les Miles got let go. He became an interim coach, right? I'm sure LSU was like, Ed, it's your gig. We're going to be doing a little interview at the end, but go ahead. And they said, nope, you know what? It's your gig. You got the gig now. It's yours. And he was back. He was back in the swing of things. So you never know. That's why Matt Luke. Remember I told you about Matt Luke at Ole Miss? He was an offensive line coach with the Rebels. He's now the offensive line coach at Georgia. They had an opening. They brought in Matt Luke. Chad Morris, who was the head coach at Arkansas, he's now the offensive coordinator at Auburn, because their offensive coordinator left to go work at Florida State. Stay in the business as much you can. You never know when the wheels of fortune could land on you, like it did for one Ed Orgeron at LSU, who's got the number one team in the nation.